The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
What's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 325. I'm Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of BleedingGreenNation.com. The Eagles had their second set of OTAs this week, one practice of which we were allowed to attend. Just like last week, we were allowed to attend one practice then. Last episode, we kind of batted back and forth what we saw at that practice. We'll do the same thing here. Nothing too complicated, probably a shorter episode. But before we get to all that goodness, I know I need to know where I can find the finest meat snacks in the land.
Jimmy, always never true when we say a shorter episode. We always say that to each other. It ends up being an hour plus. So we'll see how this
goes. I don't have many practice notes. So.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Of course, the fine people, the fine listeners of this program can go to RighteousFelon.com. Get some craft jerky with discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. A lot of good offerings at RighteousFelon.com. You can get some smoky meat snacks. And that's the kind of smoke you do want in your life. The kind of smoke you don't want in your life is this Canadian wildfire BS that is polluting the air in the Northeast and Philadelphia area, especially, along with some other major metropolitan cities. Jimmy, I got to say, not a big fan of this smoke. Have not been feeling well this week. I've had a really sore throat. Yeah. I don't know if it's totally related. I think I kind of got like a cold on Monday, but couldn't do anything. Energy level was bad. Started to feel better energy-wise on Tuesday, but my throat was like really sore. And like, I feel like I haven't been able to like get right this whole week because this air is awful. And like, I think it's kind of like keeping me, no pun intended, in a haze mentally. So that's my complaint at the top of the podcast. I hate this bad air.
I love how like whenever some event unexpectedly comes about, like this, like these wildfires, people that aren't experts pretend like they are experts. Like in this case, you know, like air quality index.
Yeah.
someone reads one thing about air quality index and suddenly they're you know, experts on. They're just like in COVID when everyone's like everyone all of a sudden became like a microbiologist like overnight. Mm-hmm. So I always find that funny when people sort of position themselves as experts on that crap when they really have no idea what they're talking about. But yeah, it was kind of a bummer. I actually have Phillies tickets for like the first time in years.
Oh wow.
On I guess the game was originally scheduled on
Wednesday.
Drove to the game, got over the bridge. As soon as we got over the bridge, game canceled. Like, come on, you're gonna cancel the game an hour and a half before you couldn't. The smoke was really a surprise. You didn't know that it was that you couldn't smell, taste, and see it the entirety of the day.
Yeah,
you had
awful
to wait until an hour and a half before first pitch to cancel the game. Ridiculous. And then the next day, they are gonna have the game. I don't want to go through the situation again where, you know, I'm driving to the game and they cancel it again. Mm-hmm. But it was cool actually. The Phillies did not refund tickets once. You know, Major League Baseball has your money. They are not giving it back under any circumstances. But they did allow us to at least postpone our whatever game, you know, we choose down the line. And then, of course, they play the game, and it winds up being like a very exciting game that they won, I believe, in walk-off fashion. I didn't see the game, but I mean,
on Thursday night, you're talking about? Yeah,
Thursday night. They
it was almost a no-hitter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Zach Wheeler, I think, went 7 innings with no hits, and then gave it up in the 8th. But yeah, so we missed out on a good game. But like, you know, I want to go to a game where like the weather's really nice. Like, you know, you just that's the appeal of the game to me, is just going out, nice weather, chill out, have a couple of beers, watch the game, but like just relaxed. And I kind of feel like that, you know, that wasn't going to happen with, you know, all the smoke and whatever. Well, but that's the interesting that you didn't feel great from it.
I've heard other people saying that too on like Twitter and other social media platforms. Just, yeah, not feeling good this week. So if you're not feeling good because of the smoke, # I hate smoke.
It is clearing up today. We're recording this, by the way, on Friday.
I hope so.
To our listeners. But it already is. Like the AQI number is, you know, a little expert that I am on air quality index. I'm looking at my phone. It's a 111 right now in Marlton, New Jersey. It was like well up over 300 yesterday. I think like this time yesterday morning.
Yeah.
So it is clearing up, and you know, the alert ends, I think, at midnight tonight, where like, so it should be pretty much cleared up by then. But yeah, kind of a weird, you know, you never know what weird thing you're going to learn about. And like, there's a lot of that crap going on these days.
And it impacted the Eagles, which is partially why I brought it up, because they moved their practice from being outside to the indoor bubble, which for newer listeners and those who are not familiar, it's much less space inside their practice facility. Yeah. Where
60 yards.
Yeah, outside they have like 3 or 4 full length, four full length, 100-yard fields to work on. And inside the bubble, like you said, only 60 yards. It's tight in there. It is kind of nice, I think, as media members to get, I think, like one indoor practice per like training camp or whatever, because then you kind of, it's just like a different perspective, you know, you get to be up close a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I don't mind like one day like that, because it's a change of pace too, especially in training camp, as opposed to just standing out in the sun all the time. It's like nice to be indoors for a change. But certainly for the OTA setting, it's probably not great because the practice.
There's 90 players.
Yeah, there's 90 players.
Minus the 10 that weren't there or whatever. But okay, sure. So like 80 players and then a full coaching staff and scouts, and they're there. It's just a lot of people in a small area.
And there's no, with training camp, you're still doing 11 on 11. You're still seeing some like various real action versus, you know, there's no pads. This is 7-on-7. The action's very limited anyway. And now it's in the indoor bubble where there isn't a ton of space. So the action was a little even more sparse than it usually would be last week. But I feel like we still have some noteworthy observations to get to here, do some bat it back and forth. I don't think there's anywhere else to start, Jimmy, than with my guy who I was pumping up last week. And I've been kind of, you know, saying, don't sleep on this guy. Maybe he could do something at the linebacker position. In part simply because there's such an opening at that spot that it feels like anyone can kind of step up. And that's none other than Christian Ellis, Jimmy, who had an interception last week in practice and had another one. Unlike last week where he picked off Marcus Mariota, picked off Jalen Hurts. I thought that was a really impressive interception, middle of the field, where he drops back into coverage. So you see the athleticism there. And then the instincts to kind of cut off the route, and make the play, good hands. And then, you know, it wasn't a real game, but took it back for 6 as well. So I thought that was a really impressive play.
Yeah, and a nice pass breakup before that as well. And yeah, so I already have an article on him in the bank, like a breakdown from his play in 2022. And he only played like 20-something snaps. It's basically just the end of the games against the Titans and the Giants, which were back-to-back during the regular season last year. They were both blowouts, so he played at the end of those games. Ahead of Sean Bradley, interestingly. Sean Bradley did not get a single defensive snap on the season last year. And then he also got some playing time, of course, in the blowout in the NFC Championship game. And then in the game before that, in the divisional round game against the Giants, only played like I think, 4 snaps in one of those games and 5 snaps in the other. So in total, including the playoffs, he played like 30-something snaps. Mm-hmm. And the amount of plays that he was involved in that limited action was actually pretty impressive. Like, he actually like was very active in those games. And when you look at his pro day numbers, they're not bad. Like, he actually has some athleticism. He's not just some unathletic slug who, you know, didn't get drafted because he couldn't move. Not at all. Like, I'm surprised he actually didn't get drafted because, you know, he's a smart, instinctive player. And, like, his measurables really are fine. Like, he's not a smaller guy. He's got decent athleticism. And, you know, I don't know what happened where he didn't get drafted or whatever. And he was with he was also with the 49ers, I believe, right?
Very like, briefly. I think the 2021 season?
Or was it? I think last it was probably 2021. Yeah, because he was with the Eagles the entirety of the year last year.
2021.
And then, you know, obviously he got called up to the regular roster last year after the Packers game because the Eagles had a horrible game in their kick coverage in that game. Keyshawn Nixon for the Packers had three long returns. I think two of them were over 50 yards and one of them was like 38 or 40 yards or something like that. And they were like, yeah, changes have to happen. Mm-hmm. So like they actually said something, you know, new is going to happen. And, you know, we were kind of like wondering what that would be heading into game day that week. And all it was just Christian Ellis got called up from the practice squad on a temporary call up. That is like a game day call up. And that was it. That was the only change they made. And he actually kind of helped make a difference on the kick coverage teams. Eventually got promoted to the, you know, regular active 53-man roster. So he was on the roster last year. I think he's, you know, thought of by the team as sort of the top special teams linebacker now, I think, over Sean Bradley. And, you know, certainly with the way that he's played so far in OTAs, you have to wonder whether he can compete for, you know, the starting job opposite. I think N'Kobe Dean's starting job is, you know, pretty well set, but he can maybe compete with Nicholas Morrow's contract. It's 1 year, barely over $1 million. So it's not like,
so maybe, you know, like 600 like guaranteed, starting, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly starting, you know, starting player type money.
It's not even make the
so
roster
I think there's
for
a
sure
legitimate
type money.
There's a legitimate chance that he can compete for a roster spot. And then of course, I think they're also going to add a linebacker at some point. Between now and the start of the regular season, whether that's, you know, by trade or whatever else. But it's an interesting position to watch because it is like a concern area, probably the biggest concern area, like on the roster itself. It's obviously not as important a position to the Eagles as really any other position on the team, if we're being honest. But like, I do think that, you know, you don't want to go back to, you know, the seasons where teams just pick them apart in the middle of the field because they didn't have good linebackers. Thinking back like to the Nate Gary days, you don't want Nate Gary level play at linebacker. You know, they got good play. They got legitimately good play out of TJ Edwards last year. Kaiser White was fine. If they can just get competent play out of their linebackers, I think they'll be fine, but it is a concern area.
He had 9 solo tackles and 11 combined tackles in 22 defensive snaps, according to Pro Football Reference. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that special teams too. But still, even so, like that, who cares? Like, that's really good. That's really good production. He plays like he has, what's the phrase? Like, his hair's on fire. A lot of juice, a lot of energy.
For that breakdown, I think I actually cut 10 or 11 plays.
Okay.
From that small number of snaps.
You know, I've seen OTA mirages before. Look at Devontae Bosby. Bosby was looking great. I forget what, I guess that was 2017, maybe. I forget the year, but.
Maybe 2016.
2018.
That might even be Chip, because that
was actually 2015? 2018. Oh, they got him in 2017. In any case.
He did, actually, and that wasn't even totally wrong, because he did stick in the league for a little while thereafter.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean. But, I mean, like, I don't think he made the team that year. I think they kept him on the practice squad. But point is, like, I don't think just because someone looks good in OTAs definitely means they're, like, making the team or starting or anything. But I do believe, and it kind of sets the table for, okay, like, I mean, Christian Ellis needs to be taking at least some reps with the first team in training camp. Like, he's earned that, I feel like, at least to rotate in there and see what you have more in him. And if he continues to play well, then yeah, he should be the starter. He should claim a starting job. So yeah, been really impressed with him. He's only 24. Like I think you talked about, like, you know, why did he fly under the radar? I mean, he went to Idaho, so it's not like, you know, this huge college program. Maybe he just kind of got like underscouted and underlooked. And some guys, I think, bloom later. Maybe, you know, it just took him some time to chip away and grow into his body and everything, and just kind of quietly develop behind the scenes, and that's really benefited him. So, yeah, I kind of, you know, like, I think they might have something in him. Like, these plays are, like, pretty impressive. And I think the size component of it, not that he's, like, the biggest linebacker ever, but he's, what, like, 6'3", 241 or so? And to have that there at linebacker next to Dakobe Dean, I think is like nice, as opposed to Nicholas Morrow, who's also small. Like, and you're having two really small starting linebackers, to have a guy with actually more adequate size, I think is nice. And so I think Christian Ellis might actually be a factor. And again, even if he's not a starter, I think maybe he could rotate, you know, but with those two top linebackers, depending how things go. And I guess my last point on Ellis isn't about Ellis at all. And it is about Nakobe Dean a little bit here, where, you know, since Nakobe Dean has joined the team, I've seen like a lot of linebackers flash in a practice setting. And I would just like to see that from Nakobe at some point. And look, there's plenty of time for that to happen in training camp. I think it kind of needs to happen. It would be nice to see that at some point. But it is kind of funny to me, like, how I've seen like almost everyone else flash, and it's just been very quiet from him.
Yeah. He actually comes from Christian Ellis. Getting back to him for a second, like, he comes from a football family too. His dad was Luther Ellis, who was former first round pick in 1995. Played for a long time with the Lions. Played for a year with the Broncos. Made two Pro Bowls. And then, of course, Christian Ellis has a couple of brothers. Mm-hmm. One of whom is on the Eagles, Noah Ellis. And then there's Caden Ellis, who plays for the Saints. Who actually plays in games. Like, he actually has a role on their defense.
He signed a 3-year, $21.5 million deal this year.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that. Okay. But yeah, it's a legit football family. Not unlike, you know, the Matthews family back in the day.
Oh, no.
So hopefully the Eagles don't get the bad brother in this scenario again.
Well, I mean, the lesser brother probably is fair to say. Ellis is really good. But so that's a really nice development. And last thing I'll say in Ellis is that, like, part of why you don't necessarily need to rush to go out and get another linebacker is you can see what you have here for a little bit. You know, you can see how things go early in training camp. And then if it's not good, then you make a trade, kind of like they did with Ronald Darby back in 2017, where you're like, we need some help here. But maybe you can just ride it out if not.
Yeah, the urgency to, you know, do something right this second probably isn't there after you see what he... And again, we only saw two practices, by the way. Like, they had five total OTA practices. We only got to see two of them, so we don't know what the rest of those practices look like.
Yeah.
But just going off what we saw, he looked good.
And all the other ones just turned it on for the media. Yeah,
they didn't happen. All right, next note. The other interception that Jalen Hurts threw went to Mekhi Garner, who was covering another one of your guys, Olamide Zaccheaus. He punted the ball after the interception. Coaches didn't like that.
But he's a big corner. Didn't like that either. I saw Goddard like mean mugging him.
Who did?
I think Goddard was like mean mugging him after that.
Oh,
play.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
But he's a big corner, 6'2", 212. He was actually thought of as like a draftable player by the draft community. Like Lance Zierlein, NFL.com, gave him a 6th, 7th round grade. Dane Brugler of The Athletic gave him a 7th round grade. I don't know if you ever look at like draft tech. They have like they'll like rate like up to like 500 players. So I reference them as a site often. They had him as the 124th ranked prospect in the country. Actually, the second highest rated player that went undrafted.
Wow.
Went to LSU. Originally went to Louisiana. Transferred to LSU. Got his hands on a lot of football. So like 7 pass breaks in 2020. 8 in 2021, 8 in 2022. Didn't run a great 40 at the combine. Like, it was a 4.55. But if you look at his measurables otherwise athletically, he's a pretty athletic player. Mm-hmm. Has some thump. I thought he might move to safety, which he hasn't so far. He's still a corner for the Eagles. But, you know, when you looked at, like, when the Eagles' undrafted rookie signings came out, I think the name that, you know, everyone recognized on that list was Eli Ricks, who played for both LSU and Alabama. And at one time was actually like in early, like, you know, way too early mock drafts, like a year ago this time, like people had him going in the first round. So he's a more recognizable name, but I actually think Garner is probably the more intriguing prospect.
Ricks is 93rd on the CBS Sports pre-draft prospect ranking.
Okay.
That they do. And then Garner was down at 244th. So still like, okay, still like a draftable kind of player by that.
Yeah.
This is what, like 250 or 60, whatever kind of picks, 270 mm-hmm. something picks. So yeah, certainly going to keep an eye on him moving forward, especially because there's just so many corners on the roster. And it feels like they kind of need to almost transition one of those guys to safety at some point, because they just have so many more corner bodies than they do at safety. But yeah, you know, nice to show some enthusiasm, but probably don't punt the ball like that. I mean, it's kind of funny.
I like it.
Oh, it's funny. yeah. But I mean, in terms of not wanting to get beat up by the offense, maybe don't do that.
Well, you're also like asking to get, you know, they're gonna call like a double move on you.
Yeah.
Like now they want to make you look bad.
Right.
So like you got to be careful about that. Mm-hmm. But I like the enthusiasm.
Okay,
from
sure.
From
I do respect the enthusiasm, Garner. But it's kind of funny. They do say, I you know, I've heard players say like, do something that makes you stand out. It definitely did make him stand out. They're not gonna forget about that. On Hurts of it all, because we just mentioned Jalen Hurts getting picked off by Christian Ellis and Mekhi Garner, which is probably
a backup linebacker and undrafted rookie. Right,
it's probably not what like people want to hear. look, you know, I think I said it last week. Like, I don't think he looked as sharp as some others did. Now, obviously, the bit here and it's not a bit to me. I'm being honest, but people will be like, "Oh, he didn't like Hurts last training camp, and he played well in the regular season." That's true. So I'm not trying to make him out in that of a molehill. But I will say what I do believe firmly is, of the 2 days, and you weren't there last year, so sorry, you can't really weigh in on this part, but of the 2 days that we saw in OTAs last year, I thought, like, and I have evidence of this, you can look back at my practice notes, which I linked on bleedingyournation.com to last year, I thought Hurts looked really sharp last year. And this year, I don't think he looked as good, which, does that mean a lot? I don't know, probably not, but it's true, like, that's just an objective statement that I'm putting out there. And to end it on a positive, Hurts did have some good throws, certainly, in Thursday's practice. He was connecting with Devontae Smith a lot, including on a double move deep down the field for a touchdown. So, yeah, not worried. Although, like, if he shows up in training camp and he has a ton of practices like this, well, then, yeah, that will mean something to me. But until we cross that bridge, I'm okay.
Do I recall correctly that he kind of started out a little slow-ish in training camp last year, and then by the end he really turned it on?
I guess that's fair to say. I think that was more 2021, but
okay.
I think, not to relitigate his entire 2022 training camp, but to do that, I mean, like, I feel like some of Hurts's biggest supporters among media members were not like thrilled by the training camp he had last year. Like, I would watch practice next to Elliot Short Parks, you know, who tracks every Hurts throw, and he didn't think Hurts had like an amazing camp, and he's always been a big Hurts believer. But Wolf said that, like, the way Hurts played last year, it made him believe he would be the Eagles quarterback, like, moving forward and get a contract. But I think he even said, like, he did not expect Hurts to be as good as he was last year, even though he thought Hurts had a goodish camp. And I think you think Hurts had a relatively good camp last year, but I still think you would say the same. Like, he still, like, way defied expectations based on what you saw.
Oh, in practice. I mean, nobody saw him, you know, doing what he did last year, you know, obviously, I think, you know, in my stock up, stock down tracker with him last year, which I'm looking up right now, and I can't find it. I think I had more up than down by like a pretty solid margin too. But yeah, certainly nobody saw, you know, the kind of season that he had at any point last year. I mean, that was one of the, you know, biggest surprises in recent Eagles history, the season that he had, and that's why they went to the Super Bowl, essentially. So I'm not, it's not a guy that I'm worried about at all. You mentioned the deep throw to Devontae Smith. Mm-hmm. That was on the money. And again, like, it's just like the first couple days of practice in June. Like, they really don't matter all that much. Even though we're doing a podcast episode about them. So, man, you know, I think, he's gotten, as we mentioned during the last podcast, I think he's gotten to the point where we both kind of view him as like, not worried about that guy. Like, that guy just works his ass off. He's maximized the talent that he has. And I think he actually has more talent than maybe we originally gave him credit for. Mm-hmm. The royal we, meaning, you know, me, you, media in general, fans in general, you know, draft experts, et cetera, right on down the line. I think he actually has more talent maybe than he was ever given credit for. And he's maximized what he has. So that's not a guy that I'm worried about in any way whatsoever. And I think his decision making is only going to continue to get better and better and better as he continues to, you know, start in the NFL. But yeah, I mean, like, he did throw two picks, but like, they weren't great throws, but you know, no big deal in June.
It's also possible he's like working on things, you know, like willing to make some more mistakes than usual because he's just trying to test things out. I will give him, you know, some of that benefit of the doubt as well, especially in an OTA setting. So yeah, like, I'm not worried, but it is like relevant data to me again, whereas like we talked about Carson Wentz, and I'm not comparing the two, but once upon a time, you know, we watched Carson Wentz stink it up in 2020 training camp. And I think you and I were like, I don't know how much to make of this. And then in hindsight, it was like, oh, well, yeah, this 2020 disastrous season, well, the training camp performance kind of foretold that looking back. So certainly, you know, again, if Hurts looked bad in training camp, then this would be more meaningful to me. But if he comes in camp and he looks, you know, fine and great, and I expect him to, I fully expect him to look good, then it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't really matter. All right. Why don't we take a break here, Jimmy? But not before we hear about Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors and RoachRealtors.com.
She just left, waved to me through the window. She's on her way to, I think, show some houses right now. But yeah, anyway, if you're looking for a realtor, voted by God as the best realtor in the history of the universe, that's a true statement. No disclaimer needed there. That actually did happen. Her number is 856-906-9295. Again, 856-906-9295 if you are looking to buy or sell your home. Brandon?
Back after this.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Back here on BGN Radio, where we're batting it back and forth as we do. Speaking of batting, did you see the A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts clips at the Phillies game, Jimmy? The batting practice?
Yes, A.J. Brown can hit.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising from the standpoint.
He was drafted.
Yeah, he was like a top baseball prospect, and he was drafted by the Padres and actually signed with them, he couldn't play college baseball because he did that. But, if he... If he wants to like play baseball, I don't know that he will, doesn't need to, but if he like wanted to play baseball after his NFL career, you know, like a late kind of 30s, mid 30s, late 30s kind of a thing, I feel like he could at least be like a pinch hitter or something.
He gotten some crap earlier in this offseason for claiming that he could hit 250 in the majors. And then after his,
I don't know about that.
After his swings came out, I think it was Jason Kelsey was giving him crap for it. And then he came back and he tagged Jason Kelsey and he said, see, you know, like, see, I'm good. So I don't know if I've ever told this story here on the podcast, but Riley Cooper.
Oh, yeah. This is a big thing for you.
Famously drafted by the Phillies. I used to love doing this. Like, so Riley Cooper used to claim he was such a predictable idiot. he used to claim. Anytime you asked him about his baseball background, he would say, you could drop me into center field right now, and I would be, I don't know if he said top 5 or top 10, in Major League Baseball defensively. He said it would take him some time to, you know, get reacclimated at the plate and become a good hitter. But he said, you could just drop me in the outfield right now and I'd be a top five, top 10 defensive outfielder right this second. And I knew he loved saying that. So anytime there was like a Riley Cooper media scrum, I would ask him purposely something about baseball, knowing he would say that and knowing that whoever was in that media scrum was like, who hadn't already heard him say that, was probably going to write about it.
Right.
So like, I played a game with myself just trying to see how many people I could get to write an article about Riley Cooper claiming he'd be a top 10 outfielder in Major League Baseball.
Nice.
But these guys, they love, a lot of these athletes love to, you know, sort of want to be thought of as great athletes in other sports. And we saw from A.J. Brown here, saw from, you know, Riley Cooper in the past. And, you know, a lot of these guys like and other talents beyond just sports or whatever. Jake Elliott, by the way, holy crap. He's like amazing at pretty much everything. Yeah. Like ping pong, tennis, soccer.
And he's pretty good at bowling. I don't know that he's hitting home runs, but I think he could play.
No, he was. Yeah. So apparently he was awesome in some other, I don't know, it wasn't Devontae Smith's thing, but they had some kind of softball thing. And he was parking him, I think, at it was him and Richard Rodgers, mm-hmm, who were standouts in whatever softball event they had.
Yes. It is kind of lame to me, like, how we don't see the multi-sport professional athlete anymore. You know what I mean? Like, growing up, growing up Dion, for me, Bo. But, like, my parents' generation or whatever. Yeah, like, these guys who not really to the same level of success, but Jordan with baseball. You know what I mean? Like, you don't see any of that at all, which is kind of crazy. Like, there isn't even one guy doing that. I feel like we need that. And this is me bringing it up to say, I feel like the Phillies should be able to kind of like have AJ Brown in their lineup maybe for the summer upcoming here as a pinch hitter again. So like, you know, not playing the field, not really risking getting hurt too much. Just, you know, pinch hitter late in the game, come in. I feel like he could provide some pop off the bench. Something to think about. I guess the Phillies can't. The Padres have his right still, but whatever.
There was one time Deion Sanders played an NFL game and then he hopped in a helicopter. Yep.
My boss at my old job at the sandwich place I used to work at, Tasty Sub Shop, told me the story. Yes.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah, like, he hopped. I don't have the story down pat, but he hopped in a helicopter, and he also played for the Braves.
Yep.
Who were in the playoffs, and he, I don't know if he actually played in the game or not.
He did.
But he hopped in a helicopter and he joined the team. In, I think it was the NLCS.
That's crazy.
I don't remember who they were playing, but he joined the team and was there. And was apparently able to play, would have played two sports in one day, which would have been freaking crazy.
Again, I feel like we need to see more of that. all right. Elsewhere in our, I almost said training camp. Not quite. That'll be late July in our Eagles OTA observations. How about Terrell Edmunds, who I've said, okay, I think people are kind of sleeping on him a little bit, mm-hmm, or kind of just not really sleeping, but it's kind of being like, oh, yeah, he's definitely not starting. I'm like, well, why? Like, he was started 5 years for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pretty
good defense.
And like a team that knows what they're doing generally. Never been, like, mm-hmm, have not had a losing season since 2003. Right. And again, I've talked about it before. Like, Steelers fans were kind of sad to see him go. They weren't like, oh, whatever, like, leave. No, like, they kind of wanted him back. Mm-hmm. Not devastated, I think, that he left, but like kind of like a little bummed. So to have him as a credible, what I would say, starter in the NFL, not a star. A guy who, and I think there's kind of a lot of safeties like this. Jaquaski Tartt had this reputation for the 49ers where a guy who wasn't necessarily known for making big plays as much as he kind of just was in the right position often and mm-hmm. didn't give up big plays. So somewhere in that happy medium, I guess you could call it. So, but he did have a splash play in practice where he knocked down about a Jalen Hurts pass that would have been like a 40-yard touchdown to the aforementioned Olamide Zaccheaus, OZ, I will henceforth reference him as. So, yeah, I just don't think he's like going to be easily displaced from the starting lineup. I think Edmunds is going to start for the Eagles this season.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think they're actually going to play three safeties quite a bit. So whoever doesn't win that starting job, I think is still going to get playing time. But I'm with you. If I were to handicap it right now, it'd be Edmonds and Blankenship for me.
I agree.
And Sidney Brown probably has more talent in his body than either of those guys. Edmonds is big, by the way. He's 6'1", 217, so he's got the most size of the three safeties. Brown is, you know, the least gifted size-wise, 5'11", but he's got the most athletic ability of the three. But, like, I don't know how the defenses under, you know, Jonathan Gannon and now Sean Desai differ from, like, the Jim Schwartz days at the safety position. But Jim Schwartz used to always say, like, safeties are will have a really hard time getting a role in the regular defense. Safeties and linebackers have a you know, difficult chance getting a real role in the defense because it's difficult for them to learn. So I don't know how that's different from his defense to the, you know, the current defense and, you know, what Jonathan Gannon ran last year. We'll see. But Sidney Brown's smart. He's fast. He's athletic. He had, you know, of course, the Red Star tag attached to him during draft season for, you know, a player that sort of the Eagles, you know, what they target in terms of character and, you know, everything they look for in a prospect. So we'll see. But I think the safety position is fine. Like, there's a lot of talk about, you know, them maybe trading for a guy like a Buda Baker or
Kevin Byard
was asked to take a pay cut. He said, no, thank you on that. It looks like they're not going to cut him or anything like that. So maybe that situation has kind of fixed itself. But I don't know that the Eagles really need a safety that badly. I kind of like those three guys at the top.
Especially when you just look at the history of what they invested that position. It's not a ton of either draft picks or money. It's kind
yeah.
of a position they're going to go lighter at. So, yeah, I think they're going to kind of be happy with what they have for now. What else do you have?
I don't remember if we covered this on the last podcast, but it's an observation that I know that I missed was that Kyron Johnson, second year linebacker, is now an off-ball linebacker as opposed to a Sam linebacker, more of like a rush linebacker behind Hassan Reddick. I think there's more opportunity for him to make the roster as an off-ball linebacker than there is for him on the edge. They are loaded on the edge with, of course, Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat and BG and now Nolan Smith. And you got Patrick Johnson still there, who I think they like. There's not many spots available there. So if he's going to make the team, it's going to have to be as an off-ball linebacker. So he's moving there. He played some of that in Kansas in college. So it's not totally unfamiliar ground for him. But I don't know if that's I think, you know, they hadn't drafted Nolan Smith. He probably doesn't move. So it's probably not the best thing that he is moving from, you know, is this guy going to make the team standpoint? And he's going to have to learn quickly that position or else he's probably not going to make the team. So I think it's a bad thing for him that he moved. But I don't know. We'll see. He does have that versatility. But it is worth noting that I think he's a guy that's, you know, firmly on the bubble.
They're Hassan Reddicking him, taking him from edge rusher.
Yes.
And I think the book on him there was he's undersized, but had a lot of, you know, like athletic traits and tools, which I think you kind of provides intrigue at an edge rusher spot. So, yeah, I don't necessarily love that. I did see him give up a catch to Dan Arnold, who for the second straight practice that we saw made an interesting catch. So keep an eye on him too when it comes to the backup tight end spots. I'm going to go to a different note. I guess I'll do two because they're short. Devontae Smith, he's still really good. He ran crisp routes all over the field and got open.
Analysis. And
made it look easy, as he should. Wasn't at practice last week, but he was this week. By the way, Derek Barnett was also at practice this week, although not participating still. Mm-hmm. Still, even though he had that ACL injury in week one last year. Maddox still not practicing. Mr. T, Marlon Tuipulotu, was back in practice more than not at all. So that's a good development for him. Sorry, I got sidetracked there. My second thing after Devontae Smith is good, which I don't think you really need to comment on, is that I don't remember if I said this last week. I feel like Marcus Mariota does not have good zip on his throws, like at all. Like, I feel like they kind of just look like ducks to me. Like, they really just, that's really anecdotal. I know, I don't, you know, like the radar gun out here, but like, it kind of fits, right? Because he was not a good downfield passer last year, and he's had like issues with like, nerve damage in the past, right? So, you know, maybe that's still the effects of that or whatever, but yeah.
He's got a funky throwing motion.
Maybe that's part of it too. It's not like he stunk up the joint. I don't really think he did much noteworthy at all. But I don't know. I don't fully buy it, I guess.
Both of the, like the two and the three, if we're calling Tanner McKee the three, they both kind of have weird throwing motions where like Mariota kind of looks like herky jerky. Like he pulls it up, you know,
not Rich's fellow craft jerky, herky jerky.
And like on some of his throws, it almost kind of looks like he's like shot putting it, but in like sort of a fast motion shot put. It's weird.
But it doesn't zip.
And, like, it does come out awkwardly. I agree with you there. I don't know if I agree that it doesn't have zip, but I do think it does come out. It looks weird when it comes out, and maybe that's I don't know. Now I want to see him.
Yeah,
again.
Pay more attention like, to that in training camp.
Yeah, and then McKee has I wouldn't call it a three quarter motion. It's not quite that drastic, but he's not over the top with his motion, which you'd like to see that actually from a guy who's already 6'6". Like you know, you're not going to get any batted passes at the line. I actually comped him recently to Kerry Collins, who actually had like a weird three quarter ish type of delivery as well. I think, when you guys get to see him in the preseason games, you know, you're going to get like a more normal throwing motion out of Jalen Hurts. And then these other two guys are going to come in and it's going to look a little weird.
I don't think McKee is wowed at all. He's barely, you know, had reps when we've seen him, but I do think in the limited playing time that I've seen, I don't think he's looked rattled. I think he's looked like poised. I mean, he should. It's 7-on-7. The defensive line isn't there. But I think back to like Carson Strong last year, who did not look good, even in the 7-on-7 settings. So I do think that's a difference. I think I've seen people at times, not so much recently and not like fervently, but I've seen like people be like, well, this is just a wasted pick. You know, it's quarterback. It's like Carson Strong last year. I don't think that's the case.
Clayton Thorson, you could tell immediately he looked bad too.
Yeah, I think McKee at least doesn't look bad, like awful from the jump. So
he's cleared that threshold already.
Yeah, he looks like he might be something as opposed to just
he's better than Clayton Thorson and
he's not DOA
and Carson Strong right off the bat. So
there's that.
Not a high bar, but yeah, he's cleared that so far. So golf clap for him.
What do you have next?
So Nolan Smith, he was a big topic of conversation during our last podcast. I enjoy watching him on the field. Like, even just, he didn't do much during 7-on-7s. I don't even think he was involved with them. I think he was off with the defensive linemen during 7-on-7, so we didn't even see him during the competitive parts of practice. But they were running these punt block drills before they kind of got going during 7-on-7s. And he's totally engaged on all that stuff. And it was interesting to kind of see that in person. Because a couple weeks ago, and I think we mentioned he was on the Chris Long podcast, and he was, if you haven't listened to that yet, fire that up, his appearance on the Chris Long podcast. It's near the end of the Chris Long episode. It's him and actually Howie. The Howie part wasn't quite as interesting, but the Nolan Smith portion of that podcast is really worth listening to. You really get a good idea of like what that kid is all about. And one of the things that he talked about during that podcast episode was he was really mad that he lost. I guess I don't even know if you'd call it a battle, but he was the number two guy on the punt coverage team at Georgia. So he was a core special teamer in addition to being a starter from like as a freshman at Georgia. And this is a guy that we're talking about here that like, he was a top recruit in the country out of high school, second in the nation by ESPN recruiting, second in the nation by rivals.com, fourth in the country by 247 Sports. Like those are the top three really,
24/7
prospect rating services. What's that?
You call it 247 Sports?
247 Sports. Is that not what it is?
Like, you know.
Oh yeah. I guess 24/7 Sports. Yeah. I guess I never really read it that way, but I guess
not
that's
a big
it.
Deal. But I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, 247 Sports.
You know, like 24/7 coverage as opposed to the number 247.
So yeah, he was a core special teamer. He played on all four, punt coverage, punt return, kick coverage, kick return. He was on all four of them, but he was the number two guy on the punt team. And he said on the podcast, he said, I'll just read it real quick. I was on all the teams. I was a special teams guy. I played on all four teams. I think the lowest I was on teams was the two, and that was on punt. I was the left guard, and I'm still mad about that. And then he spoke directly to, I guess, who their special teams coordinator was. He said, Coach Hartley, I'll never effing forget that. And then I guess his teammate's name was Smail Mondon, I think it's, I don't know how you pronounce it, but he said, Smail Mondon did not beat me out of that job. I took every step every day correctly. So to have a guy who's consensus top four recruit in the country, and he's mad because he's the number two guy on one of the four special teams mm-hmm. teams. That tells you a lot about what that guy is, A, as a competitor, and B, as a guy that just loves playing football. And you got to love to kind of hear that kind of quote from the Chris Long podcast. And then, you know, just like I said, I was kind of focused on watching him during special teams drills. And yeah, he's totally into it.
I am looking forward to the Nolan Smith mic'd up whenever we get that. Okay. I don't know if it's this season as a rookie, but I feel like we're going to get it at some point. And I'm sure he's going to, you know, obviously they don't really like show you always the best things, but I still think he'll provide enough content that there will be some good things relative to other mic'd up players. So looking forward to that because he brings the juice really high in Nolan Smith. All right, Jimmy, why don't we take another break here before we get into our last segment? And before we do that, I will tell you once again about Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, which you can get by going to righteousfelon.com, which I'm currently doing here on my phone. They have like bundles of gifts you can get. Father's Day coming up. When's Father's Day? I should know this, but I don't. That's the 18th. Yeah, it's the 18th. So plenty of time, I believe, to order and get some treats for your dad. It's an easy gift that I'm sure he will love. A bunch of other options available at Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. And you can also look at like 100% pure. For too long, jerky has been cut with weird fillers, strange chemicals, and swag ingredients. Righteous Felon products are high in protein, low in sugar, and made with clean, simple ingredients you can pronounce without ever compromising taste or texture. You can also see like where they source their jerky. They have a thing that says fast shipping, which I've talked about before. My mom ordered and got it the next day. So yeah, go check out righteousfelon.com. Use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. It helps support BGN Radio. It's the meat snack that is located at the NovaCare complex that Eagles players eat. So it's really a no-brainer to go try it with discount code BGN15 for 15% off. Jimmy.
Back after this.
Kristen Rocha, Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors. Kristen Rocha, Roach Realtors.
She's the greatest.
856-906-9295. 856-906-9295.
Back here on BGN Radio. Where I have to keep clearing my throat because the smoke, I think, is just destroying my lungs. I don't know if this is true. I love my mom, but she definitely said something.
Stop being a liberal snowflake complaining about that.
About the weather. Man up. She said something to the effect that like the air quality was so bad it was like smoking 600 cigarettes or something.
No. So what it was is if you're outside for 24 hours, gotcha. It's the equivalent of smoking 6 cigarettes is what I had seen.
Well, I don't smoke cigarettes and I don't plan on it because I don't really love, I'm not like a big, I just don't love the burning. I don't love that necessarily. It feels like I can't breathe and I don't love that. Typically, I do want to breathe well and not happening right now. I don't know why I brought this up, but any case, my next observation, Jimmy, is something that really didn't have to do with practice so much itself as something that was said before practice in Nick Sirianni's Like, what I guess is his final press conference.
This is where I was going to. This is my last note, so I'm done. I'm wiped out after
here
this,
we go.
Continue.
I think same. So it's fitting that we end. I'm looking, going through my notes. Yeah, it is my final one here. And it's that Quez Watkins was the player that Nick Sirianni named when he was specifically asked who stood out in spring workouts and OTAs. Is there any kind of, are there any players that stood out? Was not specifically asked about Quez Watkins, which is meaningful because typically it means more when a coach kind of, or a player throws out a name unprompted as opposed to, hey, how did Quez Watkins do? Oh, he did great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So it is noteworthy, especially I think because Sirianni doesn't do this. Like, I was surprised he said it at all because typically I feel like he knows what the media is trying to do and he kind of doesn't want to single guys out because he feels like it's unfair to other players if he, you know, if he leaves someone out. So it was interesting to me that he said Quez Watkins is, quote, doing a really good job and, quote, playing a number of different positions. Or sorry, no, that was Jalen Hurts, who also hyped up Quez, but was specifically asked about Quez. I think Sirianni said Quez is doing a phenomenal job and kind of alluded to Quez knowing that people are kind of down on him and kind of being motivated by that. So I guess my question for you is, like, what do you make of that entirely?
Two things. Well, one thing really, and then maybe, well, I'll just say it. I think some people are motivated by positive encouragement and feedback, and maybe that's what Quez is. And maybe Sirianni is just playing that. And some, you know, some people, players, whatever, can be motivated by criticism or negative feedback. Maybe that's not what Quez is. So maybe he needed to hear through the grapevine some positive feedback from the head coach, in which case that was probably a pointed effort by Sirianni to do that. If you want to go a little more conspiracy here, you could say maybe they're pumping him up because they already signed Olamide Zaccheaus in free agency and he's a reliable slot receiver. And Quez Watkins is making 2.8, something like that, because he reached playing time incentive. So he got a bump in pay in his fourth year on his rookie contract. Which, you know, not a ton of money, but not meaningless.
It's a lot for a guy who's going to be, like, at most, fourth in targets on the team.
Yeah, and just for historical reference on that, we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but Rasul Douglas got that same type of bump in his fourth year, and they were basically going to cut him unless he took a pay cut off of that, and he took the pay cut. And then he wound up getting cut at 53-man cutdowns anyway. So, you know, it's not out of the the Eagles look at that bump as something they'd prefer not to have to pay, which, of course, any team would. But they've taken it to the not the extreme, but they've taken it to the point where they've said to a player, we're going to cut you if you don't shave some of that off. I don't think they're asking Quez to do that. I thought they might, but I don't think they're doing that here. But if, I feel like if they could trade him. I think they'd be open to that. I think they'd be open to trading Quez Watkins to a team that needs wide receiver help, given that they added Olamide Zaccheaus. Interestingly, Nick Sirianni said that Britton Covey has made strides so far this season as well. He's not an outside receiver. If he's ever going to play in the regular offense at all, it's going to be in the slot. So, you know, they have some slot that Greg Ward is still kicking around. They signed Joseph Ngata as an undrafted rookie free agent. He got the highest signing bonus among all the undrafted guys. So at a minimum, that guy's going to be on the practice squad. That guy can play in the slot maybe a little bit. So they have slot receivers. They don't have depth on the outside. And they have mentioned that, like, Quez can also play outside. So right now, Quez would be the primary outside backup. Like if Devontae or AJ Brown went down, he's now a starting outside receiver. I think they could maybe add an outside receiver at some point. It's not going to be, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or anything like that. But like Julio Jones, if he's ring chasing, doesn't want to be paid a lot of money. Kenny Galladay, you know, there's still some like veterans around out there that have had big seasons in the past. Maybe get a little bit more creative. with an outside receiver or whatever. But they do have a lack of depth, in my opinion, on the outside there. But bringing it back to Quez, that's sort of how I read that. Either he just needed positive reinforcement or, like I said, a little more tinfoil. Maybe not tinfoil, but a little more conspiratorial. You know, maybe they're just saying nice things about him publicly. To sort of pump up its trade value if that's what they're thinking.
As I like to often say, more than one thing can be true. I think it's possible that it's both, that they're pumping up Quez because they think that's the best way to motivate him. And it doesn't do, at the very least, it doesn't do anything to harm Quez Watkins' trade value by talking him up. It's not like just because, you know, Sirianni's talking up another team, like, takes that as gospel and wants to do it, but it might be on the radar. Be like, oh, well, coach is talking them up, so that's another positive indicator. So I think with Quez, it's tough because I really liked what we saw out of him in training camp for a while, or in small flashes in the preseason. Like, it's not that it's different than, let's say, Jalen Reagor, who I thought just stunk. Really, didn't have it. Never really saw much there that made me believe he was actually. Like, I just never really saw the flashes with him.
You'd get a highlight reel catch or two or three throughout the preseason, but otherwise nothing.
And, the best moment of his career in the NFL was when he made that one-handed catch in a one-on-one setting in practice. Wasn't even a full regular team drill and was, like, totally invisible in team drills. It was an amazing catch, but it's also not, like, it's not real football. It's just a one-on-one drill. Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
Like, I've definitely seen Quez make, like, you know, wow, like, impressive NFL plays, not only as a deep threat, but as a guy who, surprisingly, again, I've said this before in the past, like, for a slighter frame, can, like, go up and get it as a contested catch guy. It's more surprisingly so. So it's not that I don't believe, like, he can do that stuff. It's just that I think it's insane to go into the season, like, trusting him at all. Like, he totally lost all right to be trusted in huge spots and moments that directly led to losing. You know what I mean? Like, these were moments. It wasn't like, oh, we played poorly, but then the team still won anyway. It wasn't a big deal. No, like, these mistakes were like game losing, Super Bowl championship losing mistakes, ultimately, at the end of the day. And he's not the only reason they lost the Super Bowl, but, like, he was a reason. And I just think it's really tough to trust him. So I think it's a little I worry sometimes that Sirianni's messaging on Quez is just, like, wrong, or not to him, but more so to the public. Like, well, Quez wasn't, you know, he didn't have a good year or whatever because he didn't get volume. No one's complaining about that. He didn't need to be a volume player last year.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, like, that's just a straw man argument. Like, well, Quez didn't play well. And also, by the way, you still have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. So it's not like he's going to suddenly, why is he going to get more volume this year? Like, well, that's going to change. It shouldn't change. So I don't really get that argument that Sirianni always uses. Like, so I don't know. I just think Quez has proved untrustworthy to this point. So to kind of count on him would be really silly to me. It doesn't mean you have to get him off the team, but you can't be having just the same role that he did last year. You can't just stick your head in the sand and be like, well, he'll be fine this year. He'll bounce back. Definitely. Like, why? Why should I believe that? There's no reason to believe that unless he has, like, some awesome training camp and preseason and truly works his way back into the Eagles' good graces. I think there's a path to that, but right now, like, I just assume that's going to happen, and to just hand him that kind of opportunity, I don't think that's smart.
Yeah, and just to sort of document the, not document because we're talking, but to sort of just talk about the specific plays that you mentioned where, like, they were losing plays. Washington, he makes the catch deep down the field. He gets up and he's running and he fumbles. If he doesn't fumble, they probably win that game. And then he had I don't remember if it was the Dallas game, the second Dallas game, that is, or the Saints game, both of which were started by Gardner Minshew, that they both lost. He was directly responsible for one of Gardner Minshew's interceptions in those games, which, again, if he doesn't throw that pick, maybe they win that game. Was directly responsible for an interception throw by Jalen Hurts. I think it was the Giants game at the end of it, like the last game of the season that they needed to, you know, lock up home field advantage throughout the playoffs. They didn't lose that game, of course, so it didn't hurt them that badly, but ran a bad route. Jalen Hurts threw an interception, and, you know, I think that cost him some trust from Hurts. And then in the Super Bowl, of course, you know, not a layup play, but a play that you expect, you know, if you're a guy that has to sort of make do with the targets you're getting, you got to make that play. And it's a play that he should have made. Again, like, not a super easy play, but a play that, in my opinion, he should have played. If he makes that play, I don't know how that game turns out. Maybe they win the Super Bowl. Maybe they still don't. But it's a play you certainly want him to make.
I can't get over – the one thing I can't get over the Super Bowl, I'll never be able to get over, to go on a tangent here. Obviously, the Bradbury thing is what, you know, people are always going to remember, except the end of the game. But the Devontae Smith catch on, along the sideline, overturned. I still think about that, like, maybe daily. Because it's just insane. Like, there's – I was watching – I don't know why I do this to myself, but I was watching the no clear recovery, you know, from the Eagles Cowboys game at the beginning of – or that was the 2018 season, I think. Just insane. Like, insane. Like, it's just like, what are you looking at? Like, this isn't the Devontae catch. Like, if they ruled it incomplete initially, sure. But you ruled it complete, and then you looked at that video, which was not inclusive. It just wasn't conclusive. It wasn't. You can tell me that you were 99% sure that was not a catch. Okay, sure. But that's not the threshold, is it? It's 100%. You cannot say with 100% certainty it wasn't a catch. And that play, I forget
when Nick was celebrating on the sideline, like saying, "All right, come on down."
Right,
and that, like, and they, like, that's a catch.
They could have gotten seven there instead of three, and that would have been a huge. Yeah. So anyway, sorry to go off on that, but like, I just think that's insane that that doesn't like.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because like the first Super Bowl, the one they won against the Patriots, there were a lot of calls that could have gone bad, and I think all the calls that they made were right, but there were a lot of calls that could have gone badly, like the Ertz, you know, when he dove and when he. The ball hit the ground in the end zone. It popped up. And they were going to maybe not call that a catch after he took like four steps and jumped. Like, it was, that would have been the most insane overturn ever. Yeah. And then the other one, like the pass to Corey Clement in the back of the end zone where he caught it and then he brought the ball back into him. But the ball was in midair for like a hot second while he had total control of the ball, but they were, You slow anything down. This is a big Les Bowen gripe about replays, where you slow anything down by, you know, five times, you're going to find something maybe to like to nitpick and overturn something. But they made the right call by not overturning that. And I feel like there was another one that could have gone badly if they had.
I feel like, you know, Devontae's catch on the sideline is more of a catch than Corey Clement's catch. Like.
Okay, I'd have to look at the Devontae one again. I can't even really picture it in my mind what happened on the play
down the right sideline.
Go back and look at that, but yeah, the Eagles were fortunate that, you know, they didn't get hosed in the Super Bowl that they won, but they kind of did a little bit in the last one. You know, not that, like to make you know the referee excuse, but they didn't get that same luck that they did the first time around.
Well, yeah, again, like the Bradbury thing, that's more of like. I don't like it, but
that was a penalty, but like, come on.
It's also
like, I thought that was clearly a penalty. He definitely impeded his progress, but it's a call that they don't normally make in that situation.
It's also, I think Bradbury's comments from after that game kind of got misinterpreted. He did not say like that definitely should have been a flag. That's not what he said, at least to my interpretation. He said he was doing that all game and then they threw it there. Like, he kind of said like, in not direct kind of a way, he took accountability, which he should for that. But in a way, I thought he pointed out that that was not the first time he did that all game. And yet it was the first time they called it all game. I thought he kind of at least alluded to that. He didn't say like it should not have been a flag, but he did say kind of like what you're saying, that, well, then like the standard for that game was that that wasn't a flag earlier, but then it was in that moment. So that's kind of, you know. Not really.
I like this answer there. He didn't go down like him and the Eagles in general didn't go down like a bunch of losers.
Yeah, he wasn't 49ers. Excuse making, to be clear, but I think he did kind of point out that like that wasn't the first time he did that all game. He kind of did say that. So, you know, anyway, that was a tangent, but I'm going to go back and rewatch the Super Bowl for an article where, so I feel like I kind of need to do a, what's the word? Like, I guess to kind of have closure on it, to put like kind of really tie a bow on the 2022 season, and then be able to kind of it's an exorcism almost.
Exorcise
the demons, kind of put out some final thoughts on that game. And also, like, if you're be like, "What, Brandon, why do you do that? It's insane. Why would you want to hurt yourself like that?" Well, the part of the goal is like so that you don't have to. So if you ever kind of get that itch for some reason, I don't know why you would, but if you did, well, now you don't have to, because I can do it for you. So I'm hoping to do that at some point before training camp begins, as a way to kind of close the book, get closure in the 2022 season. But anyway, this is a big tangent. So,
you know, I've actually looked back at that game just in bits and pieces, like for, film breakdowns or whatever. And I forget what I was watching specifically, but the Chiefs made a lot of really little plays that wound up being big. Sure. Like the one that stands out in my mind there is the Eagles are down in Chiefs territory. I think they were just on the outside of the red zone, and Jalen Hurts. Oh, I was okay. So I remember what it was. I was tallying all the Eagles sacks allowed on the mm-hmm. season. I'll have that out next week. And one of the sacks was like a 1 yard loss on a play where Jalen Hurts ran out of bounds. But he had he had to beat 99. I forget his name. Kalen Saunders, maybe. Mm. He had to beat him to the edge. He's like a 300 plus pound defensive tackle. And this Saunders dude, 99, hustled his ass off to run to the perimeter to force Jalen Hurts to run out of bounds, when otherwise it would have been like a gain of at least 10 yards. And they wound up kicking a field goal on that possession instead of getting a touchdown. So that was just one of in looking back at that game at specific players, just because I'm doing like a film breakdown or whatever. Just little things like that have stood out in the Chiefs making all these, beyond Patrick Mahomes playing his ass off. They made a lot of big plays in that game.
It's a game of inches, as they say, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Get into final thoughts territory here, but Vic Fangio, speaking of Patrick Mahomes, was asked at Miami Dolphins practice, OTA practice on Thursday, if basically, you know, he was asked like if the Jonathan Gannon, you know, situation was like went differently, would he have been the Eagles defensive coordinator? And what did he say? Did you see it?
He said, "I won't confirm or deny or something like that." Yeah, but he so like if it weren't, if that weren't the case, he would have just said no.
Right?
Yeah, dumb question. Next. But yeah, no, he was basically he left the window open for whatever interpretation you want to make, and the one that I made was that oh yeah, he would have been the Eagles defensive coordinator if
why wouldn't he have been? He was in the building. Like they were. Yeah. Why would they want to consult with him? Apparently, just for offense, like you know, consulting, using him as an offensive guy, you know, getting a defensive mindset, and then like just want him to lead. You know, and it doesn't make sense. Like okay, we value your input here, but actually we don't want you, and actually we want a guy who has worked with you. But isn't you? You know, like, that doesn't really add up. Of course they wanted him, right? Like, why would they want Sean Desai over Vic Fangio? Not to say that Desai can't be good, but like, that's the OG. Like, you're getting the original version of this. Why do you want the adaptation of that defense?
What would it have been, by the way? Like, why wouldn't he have? Like, why would he have taken the? Was it because Gannon said on the field after the NFC Championship game, I'm back. I'm going to be the defensive coordinator again next year. Is it at that point Fangio saw that and went, okay, well, I'm going to get a defensive coordinator job somewhere else then?
Yeah, I kind of like struggle to fully reconcile this too. I mean, I guess you could say like if the Cardinals had shown initial interest in Gannon, you know, like during that the wild card round.
Yeah, when it was allowed to have contact with them, yeah. Which,
by the way, why didn't they? Like, why wouldn't they just interview? I don't know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, did they see something in the Super Bowl where they're like, "Oh, we got to have this guy."
Well, I mean, it was after the championship game, I guess, that they really locked in on him. But even then, like,
they didn't have quarterbacks. it's not like he game planned the crap out of that game as much as the Eagles pass rush is just awesome.
It's gonna be very fun to root against the Cardinals for as long as he is there. Just is. I mean, all right. We don't need to relitigate Gannon.
I feel like a lot of people involved in that situation. I'm not talking about like fans or whatever. I'm talking about like personnel people now hate Jonathan Gannon.
What do you mean?
Like I think a lot of people are very upset with the way that Jonathan Gannon handled himself during the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl.
You mean Eagles people?
Eagles people and probably Fangio too.
Mm. Yeah. Sure.
I can't speak for anyone. I can't speak for Fangio, or like the Eagles or whatever. But I kind of feel like he pissed off a lot of people.
I mean, that's what Matt Mullen said.
Did he?
Who was it? There was an article in the Inquirer. Oh, it was Marcus Hayes, I think, actually. Our good friend Matt Mullen was promoting it. That's why I had it in my head. But yeah, Marcus Hayes had cited a couple sources right around the draft after the tampering stuff came out that people in Eagles building were not happy with Jonathan Gannon.
That's probably right.
And it's like, I've heard people be like, well, does it really matter? You know, like, whatever. Like, was he like, did he not want to beat Patrick Mahomes or drop a great game plan because he took like a whatever phone? It's like, that's not the point. If more than 0% of Jonathan Gannon's energy if more than 1% of Jonathan Gannon's energy went to something other than stopping Patrick Mahomes, that's too much. That's way too much. It's already too much. Agreed. That's a failure. Like, no, wrong. If he was not 100% locked in, would it have made a difference too? I don't know. But that's not the point. It's that, like,
like, if he went to dinner with his wife and kids, you're not going to slam him for that. But
sure.
But that he was interested in his own.
Yeah, he's allowed to have a personal life, but he can't have a professional conflict.
Yes, exactly. You can't be thinking about your future as a head coach when you have a Super Bowl possibility right in front of you, when you have a ring right in front of your face.
And does the evidence say that he was? Like, does the fact that, you know, like the Chiefs' offensive performance, Mahomes, these were like all-time performances for Mahomes and the Chiefs. They weren't, this wasn't just like another routine game for them. Like, by measures of like EPA per drive and all that stuff, like success rate, like this was like it's one of the worst defensive games the Eagles have played since like 2000 or something. Some of those metrics. Like, does that really point to Gannon definitely being like locked in and all? Like, because if he was, then that's even more embarrassing because then he tried super hard and was like a total failure. So whatever. Yeah, he sucks.
And then just all the lying about, like, you know, saying like a reporter said, I want you fired. Right. And nothing even remotely close to that happened.
Yep.
What was the other thing you lied about?
I mean, we just got stuff factually wrong, too.
Oh, so there was a thing.
He lied about the tampering.
Yeah, right. He did lie about the tampering. And then there was a thing during the Super Bowl week where he said he was out at a restaurant or something like that, and an Eagles fan came up and started the phrase he used was started dog cussing him. Wonder if that happened. Like, that when he said that, I was like, oh wow, that's really aggressive behavior by a fan. Like, that sounds over the top. But I never, you know, considered that he was lying about that. But now hearing that, like, he made up a whole scenario about a reporter telling him he wanted to be fired, like, I wonder if, like, that story about the fan quote-unquote dog cussing him actually happened either.
Snake oil salesman Jonathan Gannon.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Jimmy.
Looking forward to a little time at the beach coming up. You're an LBI guy, right?
That's right.
You going down at all?
I'll be there at some point. I think, yeah. I think going in a couple weeks from Monday or so.
Yeah, well, hit me up.
Okay.
We'll get a beer or something.
Okay, sure.
But yeah, looking forward to this time off. I know that, like, a lot of people say, like, there was just a thing people were tweeting out a few days ago, like, only 100 days until the opening Thursday night game. I'm not in a rush. I'm looking forward to enjoying my summer a little bit. Summer's the best time of the year, in my opinion, just generally speaking. And then when football season comes around at the end of the summer, that's great too. But I'm in no rush to go ahead and enjoy my summer here.
I mean, I get it from a fan perspective because you're not, like, it's not literally your job. I know.
People right, I understand. But, like, even just generally speaking, isn't summer still, like, the best time of year?
I'm a fall guy.
Well, how would you rank them, 1 to 4?
Fall, summer, spring, winter. I don't like the cold a ton.
Yeah, I'd go summer, fall, spring, winter.
I think the ideal weather should be, you should be able to wear a hoodie and, like, you know, sweatpants or jeans or whatever, or shorts, and either way feel comfortable. Like, you're not too hot in the hoodie or you're not too cold in the shorts, and that's like fall.
Okay.
That great fall weather you get, I feel like, that crisp air. So big fall guy. Not a fall
little
guy.
California action there. You gonna move to Cali?
No, can't. I mean, they have the forest fires out there too.
Yeah,
bad air. Also expensive, from what I hear, and also I don't know. Not a believer in Pacific time, East Coast time, baby. It's the only time that counts. It's the only true
East Coast bias.
Yeah, it's the only true time. My final thought is I want to give a shout out to SD once again, ESTI, not a sponsor, but our friends who've hooked us up in the past with some free hummus. Jimmy, you just got some last week, right? Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors.
Yeah, Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors is a big hummus fan. So she had that. And then what was the other thing that you
overnight
got?
Overnight oats. They have other things that are not
overnight
hummus.
Oats. Yeah. She was a big fan of the overnight oats.
Okay. Yeah. If you see those in stores, any kind of SD product, give it a try. I think you'll like it. Not a sponsor, just a brand that I think is really good and I believe in. All right. So like we did the thing where like short episode and then we're an hour and 13 minutes
right.
So in.
You called it.
So yeah, but we will, even though the Eagles are taking a break, we will still be recording weekly pretty much here. I believe we will have one of our, I'm not going to say what it is exactly. I'll leave the suspense to me, but we're going to have one of our favorite podcasts that we do each year. Next week, so we're going to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's one that the listeners, you and the readers of Bleeding Green Nation, can get involved in as well. So that'll be fun, and plenty of other good content still coming up on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. I know, Jimmy, you'll have your dumpster fire series soon. You talked about, when was that again?
It's
Jimmy is leaning over to look at his calendar.
Cowboys will be the 26th
okay,
of June,
so late June,
and then it'll be Giants the 27th, Commanders the 28th. Spoiler, I think I can just go ahead and say this. I'm going to do one on the 49ers this year.
Wow.
And then on that Thursday, and then the Eagles to wrap it up on that Friday that week.
Can you do one about...
It's always the last week of June.
Can you do one for the Cardinals too, please? I mean, that's very easy.
That's a little easy, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it's deserved because of Gannon, but...
I can shoehorn them in into one of them, maybe, whether it's the Eagles or the 49ers.
Yeah. Or
the
49ers
are in
one reason and just a takedown of Gannon.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been BGN Radio. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brandon Gowton. Follow Jimmy Kemsky on Twitter and Instagram at Jimmy Kemsky. Our handles should be in the show description here below. In addition to information on our sponsors, Righteous Felon and Craft Jerky, go to RighteousFelon.com. It's going to help BGN15 for 15% off your order. And if you're looking to buy, sell, or rent a house, you can contact Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors and RoachRealtors.com by calling or texting this following phone number.
856-906-9295.
Give it a try. Reach out to her. And, you know, if you need that information. And what's the service she provides for free, Jimmy? You always say, like an estimate on your home?
Oh, yeah. So if you're just looking to get like an idea of what your house would sell for, if you're putting it up for sale or whatever, because like the real estate market has exploded over the last 2-3 years where home prices have gone way the hell up. So, you know, she can basically do home comps in your area and give you a really good idea of what your house would probably sell for. So she doesn't charge anything for that. Just if she does that for you, just ask that, you know, you give her the chance to be your realtor whenever you do buy or sell a house.
Yeah. Give it a try. Why not? I mean, even if you're not looking to sell, why not get an idea of what your home could be worth if you want to do it down the road or just want to, or if you're just curious, right? And and then you can always pay her back by using her when you do need to do that. Or I'm guessing if she's not licensed in a certain area, she can maybe help you connect with people as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like if you're anywhere in the country, so Remax is national and she has, she knows who's good and who isn't. So if you're, anywhere in the country and you're looking for a realtor, hit her up and she'll help you out with that too.
All right. Awesome. We will talk to you all next week here on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.